Well, if you think that social media outrage has ruined everything, then our next guest has written the book for you, because How Social Media Outrage Ruined Everything is the snappy subtitle of the new book by political communications expert and the founder of the US not-for-profit Center for Impact Communications, Ed Koper. The book is called Angertainment, and Ed describes it as gonzo journalism sprinkled with dad jokes. Ed, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks, Julian, for having me on.
It's a great pleasure. Now, you describe this book, I think, as explaining why you were wrong. So let's start by hearing a little bit about yourself and your career and how it led to you writing Angertainment.
Yes, and look, I try not to make a habit of being wrong, but I am not too big to admit that on one very big feature of our modern world, I was completely wrong. And I cut my teeth when the internet was a very hopeful place.
Oh, I remember the days.
The good old days when, you know, the mass forwarded email and the early days of social media, where I thought, great, we can finally break down all the old gate-kept intellectuals and, you know, walled gardens of information, and we can connect with anyone in the world. And, you know, I would use the internet to mobilize people around political issues.
And you thought basically the internet was going to help the left to win.
This was great. I thought, you know, the right of politics are never going to get the internet. They don't understand how these kind of open democratic things work. So here's an advantage that we're going to have forevermore. Now, spend a day on social media. These days, you'll see there's one side of politics who absolutely dominates, and that's what proves me wrong, is in fact the furthest, most extreme right-wing opinions seem to do much better. And these populists that are coming up out of the woodwork in every country are all of a sudden gaining our attention more so than any other political characters. And it boils down to the truth now that actually the internet and social media really favours hate over hope now. And it's become a very hateful and angry place. And that's having a lot of negative impact on society in ways that I think we should do more to understand.
And you sum it up in the portmanteau word that's the title of your book, Angertainment. What's your definition of angertainment?
Well, things that provoke emotions like anger and fear, when they meet with things that get our attention, like all good entertainment does, that's the winning formula about winning at politics, society, culture, getting influence, getting power, getting clout. That's the combination of those two things coming together. And look, I'm not the first to use it. I think Malcolm Turnbull claims he invented it to do with shock jocks and Sky News, and that was definitely a form of angertainment. But this new form on social media is a new beast entirely. And it is incredibly powerful. It is incredibly widespread. And it really does influence every part of our daily lives now.
So who would you say are the sort of classic exponents of angertainment, so that the audience sort of knows who we're talking about here?
Well, there's one guy in the White House in America. I'm not sure if any of your listeners, you know, follow US politics that closely. A real estate baron turned reality TV star. Yes, Trump is a really good example to talk about, because he's a bit of a policy-free zone. He's a bit of a vacuum when it comes to actually wanting to do anything or say anything meaningful, but he loves attention. And everything that he does is designed to gain attention. What does he do? He makes people angry. He makes them fearful. It's these old political boogeymen like immigrants and women and trans kids and all these culture war issues. They do really well on social media, and he knows that. So he's out there with this new form of political entertainment, this political theatre that gets him a lot of attention. And attention these days is power, and his power these days is really unquestioned.
Yeah, and MAGA is a big focus of the book. You describe it as a global cautionary tale, and indeed one enormous global interconnected barking pack of angertainment. But you also sprinkle in a few Australian examples as well, including the Voice referendum. And I was interested in your analysis of the Voice referendum. I wondered if you could tell us how the failure of the Voice referendum was, in your mind, different from, say, the failure of the Republic referendum decades before.
Yeah, and amazing. And you know, the same four-word slogan that sank the Republic, it was don't no, vote no, sank the Voice to Parliament referendum, you know, almost 25 years later. And there was something incredibly different about the world in the Voice to Parliament referendum. And you ask public opinion experts about that turnaround. The Voice enjoyed about 70% approval and got less than 40% approval on referendum day in the space of under a year. Mm. It went from overwhelming support to quite, you know, decent rejection. And every Australian that was following the issue at the time would have had this very unsettling experience every time they opened their social media feed to see this hysterical outrage, quite often misinformation, sometimes AI generated, sometimes not even about the issue at hand, just this canvas that all this grievance politics was painted onto. You're going to miss out on something because somebody else gets something that you don't have. That's grievance. And you put that on social media, there were torrents and torrents of this hysteria. And the effect of that on a society is it's very disorienting. And it's very confusing, and it's very hard to get information that is true and factual through to anyone in that environment. And that's what we found during The Voice. Those four words, don't know, vote no, they really came to the front when you are disoriented by social media noise. You're not sure where to look. And a lot of people switch off. And a lot of people, when they're confused in a referendum or unsure about which side is telling the truth, they're just going to default to no. And I think we saw a lot of that happening. But for me, the worrying thing on top of the issue itself was, is this a new era in Australian political discourse where every issue is going to be bombarded with this hysteria and noise like The Voice was?
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Ed Koper, author of Angertainment, How Social Media Outrage Ruined Everything. And it was interesting, Ed, you used the term grievance politics there when you're talking about the Voice referendum. But in the book, you reject to some extent the frame of grievance politics and say it's more accurate to see angertainment as a division between those who don't want to partake in culture wars and those who do. I wonder if you could explain what you're thinking there.
Well, if you think about the average interaction you have on the street in real life or with a neighbour over your back fence about an issue, you're generally not going to come to blows and shout at each other angrily. And the difference is on social media, we are always in that environment where we are shouting at people who are reduced to their political tribe. And we don't see each other as people. We see them as, you know, caricatures or avatars of whatever issue or political tribe they're on. And so that environment fosters a lot of conflict, and conflict does really well on social media. The whole point is, you know, to keep us in conflict and to keep us arguing and to keep the comment thread going and to keep the clicks going. So conflict is wonderful. And so that's the kind of the grievance politics is really fit for an environment where you don't actually care about the grievance. The people who are whipping us up into these frenzies, they don't have any ideology. They're not trying to push a political movement or political barrow on an issue. They're using grievance just to keep us at odds with each other because it's great for engagement. It's great for attention. And you know what? You can monetize attention now on the internet. You don't even have to care about politics at all. But if you want money, you can go out there and have some grievance that you air to the world and are angry about it. That's the shortcut. That's a hack for you to get a lot of money and attention. So it's really the tail wagging the dog.
I think many people would agree, Ed, with your diagnosis of the problems that social media has caused. It's a much harder thing to work out what the solutions might be. One thing you say is that the key antidote to angertainment is to find other highly effective things that capture our attention through emotion. What are some examples of that?
Well, one that might be near and dear to your heart might be comedy, for example. If you've ever been involved in a comedic troupe that can talk about political issues in an entertaining way, that's another emotion that can compete with anger and fear. And we see all sorts of examples about that. You saw Stephen Colbert just finished up his run on The Late Show and Jon Stewart on The Daily Show in America. You see a lot of the ability for other emotions when issues are told entertainingly. It doesn't have to be anger. It doesn't have to be outrage. So we can do that. But all the solutions are going to come from the technical, from the social, from the cultural, from the political, from our behaviour interacting with each other. But by far and away, the one thing that could help address this form of angertainment is for social media platforms to stop rewarding things that cause those negative emotions, that political rage bait. Mm. You know, no one's going to make political rage bait if the algorithm doesn't favour it. The only reason they do is to get those clicks. So that's up to the platforms. Why don't they start rewarding things that build bridges, that build consensus, that have us getting along, that or comedy that rewards, you know, tickle our funny bone rather than, you know, the outrage parts for us. This is why we're in this conundrum. So that's the place you've got to start. Yes, there's things individuals can do and should do, and we can learn about those, and we can be better consumers of information, but we've also got to address the source of that information.
As someone who at least knows a few people who've been involved in comedy in the past, I was pleased to see your mentions of comedy, but did wonder whether maybe you overstated the capacity of comedy to have the sort of political effect that you clearly desire. But it is true that the focus of your argument is, well, as you put it, an infrastructure project. What is the infrastructure project that you think could help us move away from angertainment?
Well, we have to acknowledge that it's going to take a lot of political will and social will to change the big social media platforms. That's not going to happen overnight. For now, we are stuck with the way that we receive information. And the problem has been is that those who normally peddle in science and facts and political consensus and quality information have been resistant to move onto these platforms and wrap their information in the same kind of attention-grabbing tricks that other people do. And we have to be able to compete on those tricks. So the information that you see that you can get through to people, for example, a woman on TikTok doing her makeup routine while also giving political talking points of the day, we've seen in the US that sort of content goes gangbusters. And if it was just her talking about the political talking points, nobody would ever listen to it. So the same way that the angertainers hijack the algorithms to get their message through, we've also got to figure out ways that we can work within the algorithms, you know, while we're waiting to also fix them.
In that vein, I wonder if you could tell us about the Midas Touch podcast.
Yeah, it was really interesting. The whole podcast ecosystem in the US is largely dominated by what they call the brocasters, you know, Joe Rogan, Theo Von, Andrew Schultz, all these guys, coincidentally also come from comedy backgrounds. They're all stand-up comedians by trade. And they really built their platforms against political correctness. Now, a funny thing happened when Trump got elected was the number one podcast that knocked Joe Rogan off his perch was called the Midas Touch podcast. And that was an anti-Trump podcast. But it was built by people who know that you can shout angrily into the microphone and get a lot of attention in so doing. So it was really an interesting experiment that you can really be ideologically agnostic with this form of information, and that when people can do the same type of shtick on the other side of politics, it's just as successful as when, you know, your Joe Rogan does it. So, you know, it can all give us hope that when we see media diets consumed by really reprehensible figures like Andrew Tate, who are having this incredibly negative impact on people, we don't have to cede the internet and social media and podcasts to them. We've just got to find better ways of getting our message through that is built for those platforms, not at odds with those platforms.
But is angertainment that's left-oriented or that maybe a listener might agree with more, is that any better than right-wing angertainment?
Well, it's a battle for ideas. At the end of the day, you know, it's ideologically agnostic. Angertainment is the ecosystem in which we get information these days. So if you want to cede the battle of ideas to those who have bad ideas, like don't get vaccinated, or, you know, close the borders and round up the immigrants, or women should be in the kitchen, then we cannot defeat those ideas without also borrowing from some of the style, if not the substance, you know, of those ideas. So the ideology is not more suited to one side of politics or the other. That's just the meat in the sandwich. People ignore the sandwich. We have to realize that more and more people are getting their information not from news but social media. And so the more that we ignore social media and only focus on getting information to them through the news, the less people are going to find that. So that's the real challenge.
And Ed, you've got a bit of an acronym or a semi-acronym to summarise what you think should happen, but it works out pretty nicely in terms of a positive message, which is to be nice. What does being nice involve?
Well, be nice just really, you know, speaks to the way we defeat anger and angertainment. We should also be nice, but there are ways to do that. So the B is behaviour. There are things that we can do to not get embroiled in these internet fights every day with people, to see them for what we have in common, not what we have apart. Then we also, the N is narrative. We need to tell better stories, you know, where we compete with a platform that will give the most engaging story the most attention. We have to be the most engaging story. And the I is ideas. You know, where is the grand vision for the future that can pull all these good ideas together and really inspire people to change? We don't do that enough. We're always arguing negatively against, what someone like Trump is trying to do, trying to stop, their ideas. Well, where are our ideas? And the C is for culture. Now, culture is influence now. Culture is news. These creators on social media are the new town square, are the new mass media outlets. And we need to really figure out how to leverage these cultural influence in order to get ideas through in a way that we haven't really done well before. Angertainers do that brilliantly. And the E is for the ecosystem. Let's change the rules of the game. Let's change the rules so that the platforms don't reward the most outrageous, the most anger and fear-inducing posts. And let's protect our political ecosystem so that the things that in Australia stop us from becoming America, where they're much more involved further down, you know, the rabbit hole here, we've got to protect those as well. So there's all sorts of tips there. No one in isolation is going to fix this. This is a society-wide problem. So we've got to do all of these at the same time, and some of them are going to be hard. So it's important that we start trying.
Well, it's been nice talking with you about angertainment. Ed, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thanks, Julian.
And Ed is the founder of the US not-for-profit Center for Impact Communications, and his new book is Angertainment: How Social Media Outrage Ruined Everything.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.